Off the Races with Steve Bick. Enough. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We are back at the races, second half on this Thursday, Thurby, as they cleverly called it. Marcus Hirsch, who I've had to chase down the last month or so.
Yeah, I'm an elusive quarry. I've proposed a Wensby. What about Wensby? It has a nice little ring to it. It sounds as good as Thurby, doesn't it?
I said Werby. Werby was...
You didn't use enough of the actual day name. Okay, we're getting bogged down here.
Actually, you know what? Because they do... Oaks is getting short shrift. And given the era, how about Wokes?
Oh, now we're talking. I really do like that.
Thank you.
I just ended here. Can't get any better than that.
We'll talk to you Monday, folks. Marcus, before we get into Derby Oaks and your coverage and what you've been assigned, I brought it up with Gary Young to start the show as a Chicago native. Opening day at Arlington tomorrow.
Well, I did write a story yesterday about it for the Daily Racing Form. I basically just said it's like the first day of the end of your life. They started the meet, but at the meet is going to be the last in Arlington history, supposedly, as they at a shareholders meeting, CDI earlier this year said that they were going to sell the property for development and not race any longer there. You know, the writing's been on the wall. We've talked about it before. It seemed like an inevitability to some extent. I mean, the stories were always out there. I resisted feeling that way, and I think that even people who were aware that it was a real possibility, the news that was going to happen, still, I don't think people have really even processed it yet.
I agree.
You know, we got one track left in Chicago and no harness tracks, so Hawthorne is tasked with hosting thoroughbred and standardbred racing, so they can't support a thoroughbred circuit. They also were permitted, I mean, they have they've got to still cross a couple T's and dot a couple I's for their slot machines, but that project is in limbo right now. Their construction there that they were doing to make the Hawthorne race course into a casino, that the work is not going on. No one knows when that's really going to happen. Chicago Racing, once proud Chicago circuit, six racetracks at one point, is on the verge of not existing any longer. I guess racing writ large is okay with that, or because there isn't any centralized authority, there's nothing that can be done about it. But to me, if you value the sport as a national entity and you want to have these networks through population bases, losing a metropolitan area as large as that is significant.
Yep.
Yeah. So, people are going to see CDI and Arlington saying that they want to move Arlington somewhere else. And that came up in my coverage of this opening day and has come up before. They cannot just take the Arlington license and transplant it to a new facility. That's not how it works. They would have to get relicensed and open an entirely new racetrack. And if you don't want to race at Arlington, why would you want to race somewhere else? The thought is that they have Twin Spires does good business in Illinois. In order to have an account wagering company, you have to be associated with a racing facility. So they could presumably have some de facto racing facility that would permit Twin Spires to continue operating in Illinois. And that, I think, is what is meant more than anything by we want to move to a different place. They do have a license at Quad City Downs, a defunct harness track.
I talked about this with you.
Yeah, and that's still sitting out there. We'll see what happens. The 2022 racing dates requests are due at the end of July. We'll see what happens. We'll see what sort of application is filed. I don't have any specific knowledge of anything, and people are only speculating. I just know that having a license to run a racetrack, you know, limits what they can do as far as moving things. But that does seem to be a company line right now, is that we want to move Arlington. So that merits further exploration. There will be Illinois Racing Board meetings between now and then. They have a new chairman of the racing board, someone who is, let's say, a novice to racing. Very a novice from what I'm hearing. But we'll see. They open Friday. They actually, I mean, in the face of everything, they're going to have a better meet this year. They cut back on their stakes schedule at the urging of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, who wants to preserve racing for Illinois horsemen and not give too much money away to out-of-town stakes people.
Sure.
At this stage of the game, I have no problem with that argument. They have $160,000 per day in overnight money available this year. That's the most they've had in a long time. The turf course is still Arlington's turf course.
Good point.
Great grass racing. They hope to have 1,400 horses there after everyone comes in. The Churchill backstretch being closed, people being not allowed to stable here in midsummer is going to help Arlington a little
bit. What about the Woodbine horses?
Right now, nothing from that I know of, but we'll see.
And those are synthetic surface friendly.
That's right. But I don't think it's going to be a great product, but I think it's going to be better than we've seen.
I appreciate it. I made the promise yesterday that we would cover the Chicagoland.
Right, just to get things started off on a depressing note.
Yeah, exactly. Let's raise the bar. What races are you covering for Forum?
On Friday, I have the La Troyenne. And on Saturday, the American Turf and the Turf Classic.
Very good. All right. So let's.
And I have handicapped everything. I've done the analysis for Friday and Saturday.
I see that.
I'm at least have a passing familiarity with all races, all 27 of them. Correct.
13 today and Friday, and 14 tomorrow. And let's hit Friday first, actually.
Okay.
And I'm glad you brought up. In fact, I'm going to use you as the sounding board for some of these low-priced favorites. And in fact, let's touch on Maxfield for a second.
Right.
The Ali Sheba, 4-5. Okay, I guess.
No, I mean, I think it's hard. I had a hard time getting past. It's the I think it's race four,
six.
Race 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, okay.
Those are all big favorites that I'm not against. I'm not against Maxfield. I don't. He ran fine in the Santa Anita handicap. People who thought this horse was going to be an absolute star and was better than his numbers and blah, blah, blah might have been a little disappointed. I thought he ran a solid race. And he's in against much easier here. I think he's training fine. He's probably just going to dominate this group.
All right.
At 1-5. There's no speed in the race.
No, I mean, I thought Roadster could control things up front.
He's not that fast, though. I mean, he went to the front last time just because there was no speed in any of the races at Fairgrounds. He is the other one, I suppose. Because he could make the lead. He'll be better this time than last. He surely needed that race. I saw him galloping. He looked okay. I don't love the horse, though. I mean, he's had a lot of issues in his life. I think he has chronic foot problems. And he's only getting 2 pounds. I mean, Asmussen thinks Sonneman's going to run a lot better. I was talking to him about some stuff today. Cut back to 1 mile and 1/16 is going to be helpful for him. But he can't beat Maxfield if Maxfield runs his race,
no.
And I think
right.
Maxfield will.
All right. There's two other big prices or short prices to talk about. In the Edgewood, Aunt Pearl makes a return, and it's difficult not to think back to Newspaper of Record trying the same gambit.
Well, I mean, it's the same sire, Lope de Vega. Won the same race as three races, winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf and a front runner. I mean, the parallels are shocking. I think this horse is just going to win, though. She's a little thing. And so if the course has got some give to it, I mean, I think horses like that can stay a little bit more on top of the ground, have an advantage. Some people think that a bigger horse that can power through soft ground is an advantage. Who the hell knows? But, I mean, I know that they're enthused with her training. I have not seen her works. We don't get as much workout video from some tracks as I would love to see in this era of expanding workout video, which I think is a great help to gamblers.
No
and
doubt.
Also helps attract fans because it's interesting to see what the horses do outside the races. But I'm not against her at all. The horse that I accorded, if you're against her, I think this Gift Lift horse, which is no secret, she's second choice for Brian Lynch. This horse, I've watched some of her works over the winter. She worked well. Ran very well in that Jouster race at Keeneland, which was completely false-paced. That Jouster went to the lead. No one was beating her when she got away with that easy pace. This horse finished, I think, at 22:39 or something like that. No, 22:20. And they all came home fast in that race, don't get me wrong. But she finished as well or better than anyone. Second second time out, has soft ground form, good soft ground form overseas, so she'd be the alternative.
I thought Postnup might run pretty well. 6-1, maybe boost the try a little.
I picked her. Well, I mean, if Ampero wins, the try is not going to get boosted too much.
Good point.
It's going to be hard to make money in that race. I picked her third because she's going to be sitting close.
Yeah.
And they're also, what, six horses, so it's not going to be that hard to run third.
Another low price is She Dares the Devil, 8-5, and I don't get it. I don't know why she's 8-5 and Dunbar Road's 5-2.
Really? You like Dunbar Road?
Oh yeah.
I do. I thought I did, and then I don't.
All right.
I went going through her races again. I think She Dares the Devil has got a chance to be the divisional leader by the end of the year.
Wow.
I mean, if you go back and look, I mean, her numbers were not great, but she was winning. But her Indiana Oaks didn't get a big figure, but she crushed. And she beat Swiss Skydiver, who ran her race in the Kentucky Oaks.
Fair enough.
She was over the top in the Spinster. I know she was. That just wasn't she.
All right.
Her first race back, she had worked. I think she posted 5 published works for that. I didn't think they were going to run because Cox, when I talked to him before, was iffy. Like, she's barely worked. And then she goes and she beats Latruska. She was getting weight that day. Not too much. And then Latruska comes back and wins the Apple Blossom. And this filly did that setting a decent pace when she was not even fully fit, I don't think. I think she's in for a really good year. I think she's going to win. But this is not as much of a slam dunk as those others because the competition is way better.
Yes.
I mean, there are some horses in here that are pretty darn good. You mentioned Dunbar Road. She had a weird year to me last year. I expected more. Even when she won, she didn't run the way I thought. And I know she had a spot of trouble in the Breeders' Cup. I didn't think it was that significant. I think the Breeders' Cup distaff ended up being a very modest renewal of that contest in the end. She finished okay. She's kind of not that far in front of Harvest Moon, who has not impressed me so far this year. I was going into it thinking she could really be a monster, and maybe she will be, and I think you'll probably get a fair price on her. But I wound up being against her. The two I tried to pair up with the likely favorite are the number 6, Nennis.
Yep. I used her.
Back to 2 turns, yep. Which I thought was what unlocked her in the La Cañada, even though that was a much, much lesser group. She just looked very good doing it. She had the little incident where she had to miss the grade 1 beholder when she tied up right before the race, 2 days before she had scratched. That was her intended goal. So this Madison was kind of, we're going to do this instead. Cut back to 7/8, had the rail, really bad circumstances. And everything considered, thought she ran really well. And then on the rail with En Voutant, you have to take account of the way she ran in the Fall City. Granted, she got away leading through a very moderate pace, but she also flew home 2-for-2 on this racetrack. One thing that has to be said is this is not the racetrack that it used to be. I don't know if people are aware that the nature of the surface has been significantly altered since last season. Less sand, more clay. Saw some really fast times yesterday. I've seen some fast workout times. People who I really trust have talked about, like, the form. If you think that a horse likes Churchill, you don't know that they still like Churchill because it's just not the same racetrack.
Well, the clay aspect of this track has always been the key element in terms of what I call the John Asher corollary, that if a turf horse is going to run well on dirt, it's on this track.
Often true, yes.
The 8 Bells is one of the most entertaining races of the whole weekend.
Love this race. Really do. It's got a lot of grit to it. I'm against all the favorites. I don't like Day Out of the Office at all. I mean, if she wins, fine. I lose. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies is cursed from last year. I think we can see that. And that's a technical term, cursed. There are many different computational factors that go into that, Steve. And I got 2 horses in here that I'm very fond of. Obligatory and Little Tootsie. I went with Little Tootsie.
Wow.
Little Tootsie, if you...
This is a Louisiana home cooking for you with Amos.
Trust me, I'm not a homer. Her second race was awesome. I encourage people to watch it. She crushed that horse Euphoric, who's in this race, so you can see how fast she's run. Okay, she was never meant to be a route horse. They tried her, and because she's good, she won first time. But that was it. Some people think that the lack of Lasix in her last start is what led to it. I totally disagree. I think she just doesn't want to go two turns. She worked 12 and change in the slop. She's got the perfect running style for the way I see this race shaping up. She's going to sit in the second flight and get first run on the closers. Boom. She's going to be a good price.
Yep.
I'm going to bet her. Obligatory, I do think, is way, way better than her Fairgrounds Oaks. I loved her main win at Gulfstream. Thought she was going to – well, I mean, I wasn't the only one. Look at her price in the Fairgrounds Oaks. She was 7-2. How did that happen? This horse got totally lost, Steve. Like, it was her first time shipping, first time two turns. She was off the bridle at the half-mile pole, didn't know what the hell was going on. But then if you watch her in the stretch, she finished as well as anybody. Once she, like oh, yeah, that's right, I'm in a horse race again. So I'm giving her another chance. She worked with Milf. We held her own with a pretty nice filly. I don't like her quite as well, but I like both of those horses. But it's just a race to me where – and those are my opinions.
Right.
You're supposed to develop your own opinions. But this, what I'm saying is this is a race to have opinions because there's so much there, I think.
Well, the turnbacks always appeal. You know, the horses, like you're saying, and I looked hard at Little Tootsie and also a horse like Windmill because you know she's sort of the front-end version of Little Tootsie. But I'm going to test you on the home cooking – Did you pick Australasia earlier in the card?
Australasia is a cinch.
What I tell you,
you don't like her?
I do. I
she's
do
in
like
the
her.
Open one. Other than
I know,
Lawbreds, but I love her on the cutback. She stretched out because the race was there. She's not a real route horse.
I get it. Yeah. I'm kidding.
4-1. We're getting.
I know. At least on the line. Bill Mott could finish 1-2 in this race because I thought Caramel Swirl's excellent.
Okay, I do like her a lot too. I mean that's. I'm not going to talk anyone off that horse. I rate her very highly. The blinkers off seem to make the big difference for a horse who was expressing talent without fully putting it forth. My one concern with her is she's back somewhat quick off a clearly a career best performance. Could bounce a little, in my opinion.
The race is just ripe with contenders. Super Sensational cuts back. Yesterday,
not fond of her.
Well, yesterday we had she may turn out to be a horse that was. That would prefers the synthetic. This will be the test.
Does.
Yeah, we'll see. You've got Abrogate for the Asmussen Lieblong team as well, and she's 8-1. We had a big case made for Slumber Party yesterday by Sid Fernando, but Sid planned the mating.
When you're involved in mating, it always kind of messes with your head, I find. I like the horse. I thought she would air in the Beaumont. And I know that it didn't quite go her way. Look what she did to pass the Champagne. She's got a lot of talent, she could easily win this race. That's what makes it so great. You're getting – with Day Out of the Office, I don't think she's going to get bet that heavily, but – she does ensure that all these other horses are at least going to give you a little bang for your buck.
That's the beauty of a 12-horse field anyway.
Correct.
There's going to be, there's a lot going on. It's a terrific edition of the Eight Bells. And it is funny how literally 60 days ago, the 3-year-old, the sophomore filly crowd, they looked like that there wasn't an apple you'd pick off the tree. And then 60 days later, there's like nice fillies all over the place at on the grass, on the main, going short, going long. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it's looking better. We'll see. They're there. There are a lot of possibilities. How are they going to develop? Because there aren't that many stars yet.
Well, we're going to get to the Oaks in 2 seconds. Quick turf sprint opinion.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, all right.
No, I mean, I do think that a Fast Boat's going to get a lot of play. Because of his big race at Churchill,
yes.
I think he's going to be overbet. And I preferred Sombier. Because that horse, Gregorian Chant, who beat him last time, the buyer is coming back very modest, set 94 in the San Simeon. I think Gregorian Chant is super sharp. The weirdest horse in the world that they cut back from a mile and a half to sprints, and he loved it. And this horse, I think, is going to... is going to relish the even shorter distance, get first run on the deep closers. I think Diamond Oops is going to get some play because of the way he ran in the race last year. I don't like him that well. But it's, you know, it's a tough one. It's a mild opinion for me, nothing strong.
Fair enough. Let's get to the Friday feature. Marcus Hirsch with us, DRF Hirsch. And even though you would expect that the C would be in Marcus's name, not in Mike Welsh's name, that's not the way it works.
Oh, yeah. That's very important to note when you're sending us postcards from Antigua. Who's your pick?
Malathat.
Go on a limb, why don't you?
I've got some fun ideas.
Okay, let's hear them.
Beyond her. Well, the Phillies that I have been... It's funny. There's a bunch of mojo fillies in here between Crazy Beautiful, Milfay, and Will's Secret. I want to figure out a way to get them involved. And, you know, you have to at least respect search results and travel column, you know, somewhere. So in terms of building a tri play, you know, Malathat to me is the key. But I think there's a chance for one, two, or all three of those big prices. I haven't even mentioned Pauline's Pearl, who I know Nick Tamaro we're going to talk to shortly. I know Nick was all over the other day. So
you also haven't mentioned the winner,
which is you're going to say Clairiere.
Yeah. I mean, process of elimination.
Almost.
Yeah, I love Clairiere. I'm going to go. The ship is going to sink so hard if she doesn't win. I'm going to be tied up in everything with her. I do love that horse. We'll see. I mean, she could use a little bit more pace, but my theory is she can stay a lot closer than she has. I think she has a little bit more tactical versatility that I would love to see from her new rider, Tyler Gaffleon. This filly, I was down in New Orleans. The only trip I made, I went the week before the Louisiana Derby.
We talked.
Yeah, I wanted to watch all the horses train. And so I saw her, and I just, like, when I saw her first on video from here, I'm like, oh, my God. So, because she did that thing that a lot of these three-year-olds and fillies especially do this time of year when they're doing well. They just blossom. Mm. She filled out. I don't know how much weight she gained, but she just looked like a much more powerful horse.
Fulsome.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. There's a horse named Fulsome.
Yes, there is.
And he got a good number, I think, winning that off-turf race at Keeneland. She started off going two turns. That is not a standard practice for the Asmussen barn.
All four of her races are at a mile and 16th.
And if you watch her first race, it was not an easy trip. She had to do a lot of things. Now, I know that she was beaten on the square in the Goldenrod by Travel Column. Travel Column had the tougher trip. Clairiere had the race won at the 16th pole. She just got run over. Very sad. Not satisfying for my bankroll in any way. But I do think that in a way that Travel Column isn't, this filly has kind of been pointed for this race the whole time since her very first start. I mean, she's got the pedigree for it. Do you know how often the Rachel Alexandra winner has won the Fairgrounds Oaks? I mean, the Kentucky Oaks? I think it's four times in the last 6 years.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's a key race. She won that race. She beat Travel Column that day. Now, some people were very critical of the jockey's ride on Travel Column. I kind of get it. Moved a little too early, fell asleep. Talamo, who's not riding this horse, rode a brilliant race. But she did beat her. And if you go back and watch the Fairgrounds Oaks, Clairiere was off a little flat-footed, kind of got shuffled back, was far behind. They were walking, very slow pace. Twice in the stretch, when Clairiere was never going to win. But two horses came out in front of her. Got in her way, caused her to have to go outside.
I remember. Yeah.
She's jumped leads 50 yards from the wire. I think she saw something on the track. And then she galloped out, and gallops out are what they are, sometimes useful, sometimes telling, sometimes meaningless. She was past Travel Column in a second. Nine furlongs is going to be her game. She's trained. Like, I love everything I see from her on the track, and I've watched her a lot. Just everything from coming out, just the way she holds herself, carries herself, and goes. So, I mean, I haven't seen anything to discourage me. It's a wonderful race. There are a lot of nice fillies in there. You cannot take anything away from what Malathat did running down Pat's the Champagne. That was a tremendous finish for a three-year-old dirt filly early in the year to go as fast as she did. I wonder, that being her only race that this year, if she's going to feel that at some point. And just seeing her, She's not, and I don't know the horse from, I've never seen her until this week up close. She's not carrying a ton of weight.
No.
Looks, you know, we'll just see. I mean, it's something to think about. If she's 5-1, who cares? You just go for it. But this horse is like getting a huge amount of hype. And I didn't love her as a 2-year-old. I think she was good, but, and showed a lot of potential, but I didn't think that, I'm not quite there with her. Travel column, she runs her race every time. If you think about it, her best race was when she was off the pace, when she beat Clairiere. I think she'll probably try to press her advantage, but she carries so much weight. She is the picture of a horse in good flesh right now, and it's hard to see her not running well. And I don't know, what do you make of search results? I mean, I don't know what to make of that horse. The Aqueduct form is like a little difficult to parse because the track is so deep all the time. So the farther they go, the more that laboring surface gets to the horses.
Yep. I've got great respect for her. And like I said earlier, I just think she's just, she's right behind my top pick, and then I'm interested in getting the prices in. Although, you know, the case you make, and the very good case you make for Clairiere, I could very easily turn to our longtime breeding farm sponsor, Hill and Dale, and say, let's just take the Curlin trifecta, which is very, very easy to do.
Listen,
how about all three, Malathat, Clairiere, and Milfay, all daughters of Curlin.
Oh, Curlin is awesome. Awesome. Great sire.
And very interesting, too, when you note that Milfay out of a Warfront mare and Malathat out of the wonderful Dreaming of Julia by AP Indy,
yeah,
and Clairiere out of the Bernardini stake mare,
Cavorting
of Barbara Bankies.
Fabulous race mare.
In fact, on that front, too, how about putting together
Pauline's Pearl?
Well, I'm just looking at Judmont, Shadwell, and Stone Street from an ownership standpoint.
I mean, Pauline's Pearl's out of Hot Dixie Chick. That's one of the weirdest things ever. That was a fast sprinter.
Sure.
This horse, she probably couldn't run 3/4 in 1:14. Seriously, I mean, she's this big, slow, like, she's come a long way. Team Asmussen, amazing work with that horse. She had a great winter. I don't think she's going to run any better than she has, and she needs to.
It could be a very big weekend in total for Team Asmussen. Let's jump.
We may get to that.
Marcus, let's jump to Saturday.
Oh, God, there's another day?
There's another day. I'm just going to ask you for Turf Classic and Kentucky Derby opinions.
Okay, which one do you want to start with?
Turf Classic, because we just talked to the Oaks. So you people can basically put together Marcus with his Oaks Turf Classic Derby pick three.
What a fabulous race this Turf Classic.
Yeah.
Don't auto scroll down. Okay, I had to side with Colonel Liam, even though he's like a little too short, and I get all the things. Like, when I wrote the story, the race preview for this, I made clear he might have won the Pegasus, and he's the best turf horse, probably the highest rated turf horse in North America right now. But this is easily the toughest field he's faced. There's no question about it in my mind. But I think he's going to be up to the task. I want to see what the turf is like. I do not want a lot of giving the ground with this horse. I suspect by late Saturday afternoon, if the forecast is correct, that there won't be. But we'll have to see. And if it's softer, then I chop him down a peg. I think that I think he's got more to give. I mean, he's going to have to. Because Largent is not the horse he stablemate he beat in Florida. He is not up to the same level as a lot of these horses. And neither is Two Emmys, the Hugh Robertson's latest bargain purchase, who's turned out to be a really good horse. But because he didn't have to run that hard to beat these horses, these inferior opponents, that puts him, to me, in a great position to run his very best race today, third off the layoff. That bridge race in New Orleans, I thought, was the perfect race to get him here. I think Mile and Eighth obviously hits him between the eyes. He's tactically versatile. He can stay somewhat close to Smooth Like Straight, who's probably going to be the lone speed. And watching this horse train, I mean, He's a fabulous-looking horse, fabulous-going horse, looks the part of a real champion. And we'll see what he's made of, if he's going to have to be for real to win this race, because Smooth Like Straight is a really good horse who has learned to relax, which is going to help him get a mile and an eighth and press his tactical advantage, which really could be significant. And he's run well on this course before. Both of Brown's horses obviously rate a shot. I think that Domestic Spending is the more talented of the two and will have a better campaign. But for this particular race, you've got Digital Age, who has shown a fondness for the grass course, which is a big deal because this is a turf course that not everyone likes. Loves a mile and an eighth. These two have been working together over and over and over again. As with all these Chad Brown teamworks, I have no idea who's working better. Can't ever separate them. But I do feel like they're both ready. You got Count Again, who you could easily make a case for here. Mm-hmm. He had that one bizarre race where he was eased. I'm just drawing a line through it because he's already bounced back. It's in the back of your mind, though. Something.
Well, and we had Phil on afterward, and it was not
inexplicable, right? He didn't bleed.
He didn't bleed, and basically kind of lost his action.
He did,
and Hernandez just kind of wrapped up on him.
I just cross it out because he came back without Lasix and ran huge, so I'm not worried about that.
Yep.
He flew home in that kill row, had easily the fastest, and he finished nearly as fast in Seabiscuit. I would contend both those races are slightly short of his best trip. I would say this is his best trip. The lack of pace could compromise him, but he can finish into a slow pace, too. And we would be remiss not to mention Ivar, who is a wonderful horse in his own right. His races in Argentina were awesome. He came along beautifully last year for Paulo Lobo. His maker's mark was really good. I think he bounced a little in the Breeders' Cup after running the best race of his life, still only beaten two lengths.
Yep.
I wonder a little about the mile and an eighth, because he hasn't done it yet. He may be more mile in the 16th. And this is a starting point for him.
Yep.
I don't look for him to run his best race. I think he'll run a nice, solid race. I don't look at him as a win threat.
And, of course, Paulo Lobo the other day sprung another import on us and upset the late-action apple cart in that allowance on Wednesday.
I'll take your word for it. Yeah, I've had my head in my work for the last 2 days.
Well, and I love Paulo Lobo ever since Carta Amiga. And
he seems like – I don't know him that well. We talked on the phone several times last year because I was covering the Breeders' Cup Mile. Seems like a fabulous person. I really enjoyed speaking
good
with him.
Good horseman from the great tradition of South American horsemen.
Got to
finish with a flourish because I got Tom Law to get on and I got Nick Tamaro standing
Tom
by.
Tom told me to just take his time.
Oh, did he? Okay. All right. So, Tom, welcome Marcus Hirsch from thisishorseracing.com and the Saratoga special.
Don't say that.
Are you and the wife ready to spend the summer in Saratoga?
What do you think?
I'd say yes.
Yes. The Derby.
Yes.
Okay, I got it. I got Hot Rod Charlie on top.
Wow.
I really like him. Think he's going to run a bang-up race. I'll be surprised if he's not highly competitive. I think he's going to be a completely fair price, and I look forward to wagering on Doug O'Neill's third Kentucky Derby winner.
Unbelievable. I did some stuff on Doug coming into the fortnight, and part of it is the last 11 Derbies have been won by Baffert, O'Neill, and Pletcher, 7 of the last 11.
Wow, I did not know that. Good stat.
Little note. And when Doug – you're much more likely to get a successful Doug O'Neill entrant in the lower price range.
Right. You can tell when they're taking shots. This horse is not a shot, obviously. Yep. This is a serious horse.
Yep.
He's a weird horse. I saw him he went to the spa the other day. I just was passing by there and saw him in the spa. I'm like, I did a double take because he didn't, some of these, like, Midnight Bourbon and Essential Quality. These horses, like wow, that's a Derby horse. That was not the impression I had. Hot Rod Charlie. Put him under tack. Different horse. He's pumps up.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember before the Louisiana Derby or whatever, I went through all his races. He got bet all the time in those sprints. Just didn't look like anything. And blinkers and stretch out and experience completely transformed this horse. A son of the Oxbow. He's a horse who's gotten as close to Essential Quality as anyone. I guess Highly Motivated was slightly closer, but his Breeders' Cup at the gigantic price was obviously not a fluke. He clearly needed his first race of the year, to get him going again. And I will maintain that his Louisiana Derby remains an underrated performance. He went very fast for that racetrack. Very fast. And still, to me, was finishing better than anyone. Looked best at the wire. I almost certainly went to the lead because he needed the Derby points. They didn't want to mess around with getting in any trouble. That's not the way he prefers to run. I think he's going to get his preferred stocking trip. I don't know. Were you watching training Tuesday morning?
Mm-hmm.
Then the consternation. Mm-hmm. He never left the pony.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't gallop.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little worried about
mm-hmm.
that, too. But when they let him go Wednesday, he went great. Looked great again today. He's already been a mile and 3/16. I don't think stamina is an issue. He's got a good draw. Really like him. Essential Quality, I think, is going to run his race. He's absolutely rock solid. I don't care about the work the other day. He was never asked for anything in the work. His gallops have been sensational. He's moving like a champion. I don't buy the contention that he had something left in reserve in the Bluegrass. I think he was all out. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, that's always one of the silliest things. You and Andy might not agree on much, but you do agree on the phony, oh, he had more to give. He was.
I can't trust my eyes.
Stop it. Stop with that. Oh, he could have gone faster. No, he couldn't have. Stop with that.
I agree. That said, it's a two-race prep, schedule, and he's supposed to run better this time.
Well, and it's funny. I don't want to give away too much, but Jerry Brown, in his analysis, his Derby write up, which is always extensive, Jerry actually did a deep dive on the two and three, and even one, two, and three race, and four, because there is a horse that's made four starts coming into this race. And some revealing and interesting portions of that.
Yeah. Anyway, I have him second, Essential Quality second. I was toying. If I wouldn't have seen something I liked, excuse me, from Hot Rod Charlie, I would have eaten the price on Essential Quality because I do trust him. I do believe in him. I know he's going to stay. He's got ample stamina reserves. He's a professional. He's got tactical speed. I got Rock Your World third. The talent is there. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins. I wouldn't be surprised if he could even make the lead and win. That horse will run as far as you want. And Midnight Bourbon in a tough call for fourth because there are a bunch of other horses that I think are going to run well.
Midnight Bourbon looks tremendous, and he's worked his way. There's a horse that I didn't have anywhere on my interest level coming here, and he's wormed his way right onto the tickets.
I think you got to. You mean you got the trainer, you got the physical, and doing great.
So I missed Hot Rod Charlie, Essential Quality, Midnight Bourbon.
No, I got Rock Your World.
Rock
third,
Your World.
Then Midnight Bourbon.
Gotcha. All right. Beautiful.
Because I see more of a path to Rock Your World winning the race than Midnight Bourbon. That's a horse I think can win. I'd be surprised to see Midnight Bourbon actually win. I expect him to run competitively.
Outstanding. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. And Marcus, and, of course, we'll talk to Marty McGee tomorrow. The two of them and Kenny Peck laid out analysis for both days and the whole meet. Right? Are you locked in for the meet?
Nope.
Oh, this is just a special cameo appearance?
Well, I mean, there are some impediments. If you're not going to sell the racing form, you might not get an analysis every day.
That's a fair point.
I'm sorry.
You bring up a fair point. And this is a silly thing that goes back several years.
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started.
No.
So ridiculous.
I've explained it to people.
Yeah.
It's something that should have been put to bed ages ago.
And I'm not saying that both sides weren't to blame initially, but, come on.
Yeah. Well,
all right. Well, this was edifying,
outstanding, and I've cottoned to the beard. The beard works.
I have to. I cut it off once, and I couldn't look at myself for a week. Who is this person?
Marcus, looking like a captain from the Gulf War, actually today, especially with the khaki.
I'm just gonna let it go.
Marcus Hirsch. Oh, my God, that was fun. Marcus Hirsch, everybody, we're going to stay here.
Steve.
Thank you. I love it. And we've got Tom Law standing by. And, Tom, are you busy doing something? Well, no. Do you want to be busy doing something? All right, he's ready. Let's get Tom Law in here then, and we'll get to Nick immediately to follow. We are out of control as always. It's amazing how I start with it. Last week is pretty much just the show from Churchill Downs. And then we get to Derby Week, and the energy, of course, picks up. And then it becomes literally the snowball downhill, you know, picking up speed and careening out of control. And that, and then tomorrow, it'll just be, you know, it's a free-for-all by the time we get going tomorrow. And it's a pleasure to have the president of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters join us, Tom Law. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be here. Great to be with you.
I appreciate it. And of course, as mentioned, Tom is the third member of the tripod of thisishorseracing.com and the Saratoga Special. In fact, he's wearing a Saratoga Special hat. And we talked yesterday to Joe Clancy, and Sean kicked off our visits last week. And I'm so delighted to be able to, you know, have you guys on a regular basis. And so thank you.
Well, it's I guess it's maybe part of your new normal to have three very abnormal kind of guys together.
Well, and actually, it you know, as much as we're gonna we're gonna miss having Steve,
yeah.
You know, 15 years mm-hmm. every single week at you know, 50 weeks a year. It's a lot. It's a lot, yeah, to ask, and nobody's, you know, nobody's compensated. You know, I'm compensated marginally, and then it's, you know, then it goes right into horses or into the wagers.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to ask, and so it occurred to me, because I wanted a turf writing angle, turf writing approach in that segment, because that's what it's always been. And I thought, oh, my God, I could get Tom and Sean and Joe, and nobody has to be on hand every single week. Mm-hmm. We can flip it around. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, that works well for us in a lot of things that we do. We were actually fortunate to pick up, do some TV work last year. I say TV, more like online streaming, live streaming of the steeplechase races. You know, sometimes Joe was available certain weekends. Other weekends I pitched in and did it with the live stream with Megan Connolly, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, that's kind of how our business goes during Saratoga. It's catch as catch can. Sometimes we're doing, Sean's covering the feature and I'm covering the second stake of the day, and Joe's running ragged in the office, and we got interns running around like crazy. And so we're glad to be on board, and appreciate the respect that you show the turf riders. You know, it's obviously something that we take very seriously. It's our livelihood, but something that we respect. And, you know, we respect the people that have done it in the past and done it very well. People like Steve Haskin and a lot of our other heroes. You know, Sean is a huge Red Smith and Joe Palmer fan, and, you know, as am I. Yep. And I've been a big fan of Sean and Joe and their work, and, you know, was pleased to come on board with them. What is crazy that it's this long ago, was in December of 2012. You know, Thoroughbred Times went out of business in September 2012, and I wound up with an open canvas of
right
what I wanted to do.
Immediately? That you connected those dots right away?
Yeah, so it was Sean and I, we have a great story that we tell all the time, that Sean used to, he and I were friends, and I'd see him at things like the Derby. You know, I'd see him, and he'd be like, what are you doing these days, man? You need to do more writing. Like, you're stuck in that corner office. You know, you're doing is editing. Like, you're a writer, man. You need to get out there. And he'd see me out covering stuff.
Sounds like Clancy, just, yeah, you know, just trying to, you know, inspire somebody.
Exactly. And he'd be like, you need to just come up some summer and work with my brother and I on the special. And I'm like,
he's looking for free labor.
So my line was always like, I'll do it someday. You know, someday. Oh, man, that'd be great. Someday, you know, someday. So one thing led to another. Thoroughbred Times goes out of business. You know, we get a FedEx letter in the mail on a Saturday morning.
I heard about that, right? That's Friday. Famous.
Yeah. And I was coaching youth soccer at the time, and I think I was coaching a game. And I think I had back-to-back games or something like that. Sean's calling my phone. I think my phone's probably in the car, because I'm like, what do I need to answer my phone for now? My boss isn't calling me. So Sean's like, come on, man. You know, don't leave me hang. And he left me messages. So he calls and said, hey, is it someday? So I'm like, it is someday. So he and I talked. I you know, there were a few close allies in the industry that actually called me with some opportunities. You know, it's very, I found it very flattering that people thought that highly of me to offer me work. You know, some of it was part-time, some of it was seasonal stuff, but it was great. And, you know, the opportunity with Sean and Joe came about, and it was something I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to, if I was going to stay in the racing business, it had to be with somebody that, you know, was fully invested in it.
Right.
You know, somebody like you. I mean, you have your business is tied directly to racing. It wasn't owned by a corporate entity that's, you know, way off in some office in California that can just, you know, file bankruptcy paperwork overnight.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I'm like, these guys are guys I respect. I love their work. You know, I didn't know much about it. So then, you know, one thing led to another. We had a lot of conversations. They're like, well, do you want to stay in Lexington? I was living in Lexington at the time. Or maybe come to Fair Hill. Or maybe go to Saratoga. We've always wanted to have a year-round presence in Saratoga. And I was like, whew, you know, I never really thought about Saratoga. Like, that's my hometown. I was born and raised in Saratoga. And at the time, my mother was sick. And I was like, you know, I think I might like to do that.
That might be a plan.
I had gone to Fair Hill, and I'd been there. I'd never been there before. I went and met with Joe for a couple days, and we kind of hung out there. I actually really liked it there. And I can remember even after maybe a year or so.
It's a cult, actually. Fair Hill's a cult.
Very much
I'm convinced.
Yeah,
it's something something very strange there.
It's a neat place, though.
Graham and Anita are. I think there's something going. There's something strange. With
something in the water. It's that horsey area, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware.
So South Carolina, too. South Carolina is
real close, right?
It's like Children of the Corn. It's sort of like a strange, yeah.
So I kind of fit in a little bit funny. I'm kind of the upstate New Yorker kid from my parents. Nobody involved in racing at all growing up. You know, my mom was a school teacher. My dad was a salesman. And, you know, I somehow wound up in Lexington and for 15 years. Had great contacts in the business. So I kind of have like a... I brought some pretty good ties from my days in Kentucky, and also kind of kept a lot of my roots, you know, in New York and
nice.
People I know in New York racing, maintained those relationships for 15 years, which is a long time when you're off somewhere else, you know, when you're covering Keeneland and Churchill and all that, like I used to do. So it was, like I said, it's crazy. It's going to be 9 years in December.
Wow.
And I mean, we just did 20 years of the special last summer.
Right. That's right.
So we're turning 21 this year. We're looking forward to having our first beverage when we turn 21. So we've never had any, you know. But it's going to be, you know, I know Joe and Sean probably have told you about we're kind of excited for the summer this year.
Yeah.
And ready to roll.
Nice. Well, and I knew you were. I knew you grew up in Saratoga. Did you go to Catholic or did you go to?
I went to Saratoga High.
You went to High.
Graduated in 1989. I ran on the esteemed and highly decorated high school cross
streaks.
Country and track teams.
Blue Streaks.
You know, so the Blue Streaks, yeah, I had a great childhood, you know, kind of exposed to racing back in the four-week meet days. And,
yeah,
you know,
you bet.
Grew up
24 days.
You know, summers in college at Cortland and worked at Fasig Tipton on the sales grounds.
Nice.
Kind of raking leaves and
nice.
Cutting grass and painting barns and doing a little bit of everything. And,
that's great.
And developed an interest, you know, beyond just racing, but started to learn about pedigrees and the auction business through just working there and sort of having interest in it and understanding it. Got to know Boyd Browning, who is somebody I consider a mentor and somebody that has been a great friend and an ally of me in my career and with Sean and Joe now. I've known him as long as I've known anybody in the horse business. You know, started my career at the Saratoga on the pink sheet.
I remember seeing you in that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Got a job there in 94, part-time sports clerk, you know, typing in youth hockey scores and doing everything I wanted to do racing. And they gave me the opportunity. So here I was, you know, in 94, covered the 95 Breeders' Cup at Churchill Down at Belmont Park.
Yep. It was a great
one. And they sent me in 98, the Saratogians sent me to the Derby. They were like, we're gonna have you go to the Derby. And I was like, wow. You know, like, so I was going to do some stuff for, they were owned by Gannett at the time. So I think I was going to do some stuff for, I think it was Gannett, maybe a different parent company. Some of the stuff I was going to do, they were going to use on their wire, internal wire. Had never been before. I remember flying into Cincinnati and getting a rental car. And I think I was staying in Indiana. And then I was in the old press box. And I remember I showed up and they're like, this was back in the day, you know, like, it was packed. You know, the press box was full of people. And they're like, okay, here's your spot. So then they gave me a spot. You know, like they got these little carrels around here and you have a good workspace, plenty of room. And all of a sudden a guy came from the Indianapolis Star and he says, well, this is my spot. I said, well, it's a D3. It's my spot. He says, well, okay. So we go to the office and they're like,
Tony Terry
says D3. Well, yeah, that's Tom. And yeah, that's this guy, Joe or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you guys are going to have to share that spot. So, I mean, here we are.
And Tony Terry wasn't somebody you argued with.
I was just happy to be there. Right? I was in the same room as, like, you know, Ed Schuyler Jr. and, you know, guys like these guys from the trade publications and stuff. And it was great. And, you know, that's how I ran into these guys from Thurber Times that I knew because I used to see them in Saratoga, John Sparkman and Mark Simon. And they saw me. Somebody was a staff writer there, had just resigned, like, to take another job that week. They saw me there, and they're like, I got home from the Derby and like got a call from Tom Lamara, who was the news editor at Thurber Times at the time, called me and was like, are you going to be at the Preakness? We'd like to talk to you about a job. And I was like, it's funny, the Saratogans sent me to the Derby, but they didn't send me to the Preakness. It was closer. I could have driven.
You didn't
there,
win right? the Derby, obviously. Yeah, so you couldn't go to Preakness.
Exactly. Right. So I said, but I'm going to be at the Belmont. So I ended up going to the Belmont that year. I'd been to several before. So that was kind of home, you know, it's home for us. It's New York, right?
Exactly.
So, next thing you know, one thing led to another, and here I am.
Now, 25 years later.
I was driving down here the other day. I drove from Saratoga, and the first time I ever drove to Lexington to go to the races was 96. I went to I was at Skipaway's Bluegrass that
Ooh,
year.
Nice.
A friend of mine was working for Shug at the time, and I had a couple other things going on, and I was like, yeah, I'll come down. You know, I'll come down for a weekend. Had never been to Lexington. They didn't even have a track announcer back then.
That's right.
It was a lot of fun, and like I said, the first Derby was in 98, a couple years later, when real quiet. And, you know, Mike Pegram, they used to do the interview up in the old press box. I'll never forget it. Mike Pegram, who I've gotten to know over the years a little bit. I really enjoy him. He's just a funny, fun guy.
Funny, smart
nice,
and funny.
Very smart guy. He looks around the press box and he sees the view and he's like, you could see the Ferris wheel from Kentucky Kingdom. And he goes, man, you guys got it made up here. He goes, you got a beer tap and a view of the Ferris wheel. and he's like, this is great, you know? And what a year, you know? And then, of course, then after that, I've been to every Derby since. I missed a couple. It's funny. The year I moved back to Saratoga was the year Orb won. So I missed that. Orb in 2013. That's when I moved to Saratoga. I missed American Pharoah's year,
Ooh,
too. I don't know why. I have no real reason to miss that one. People ask me why. At least the Orb year, I had just moved. It was like early April when I moved to Saratoga. And then, of course, I didn't get last year. I missed last year because it was in the fall, right? And we were still going to Saratoga. That was the closing weekend for us, so it's kind of busy with the special.
I ended up
You made it.
I came. Yeah,
I came.
Yeah. It was, and I'm glad I did.
I know.
I had already been sick. I'd already had.
Yeah. Okay.
Back in March, so I wasn't worried. And same thing when I came back for Breeders' Cup. It's my first was 01, and I.
Okay.
So 20th Derby.
That was my biggest score. 01.
I just talked an hour ago with Mike Welch about missing the Super because I chose Jamaican Rum instead of Invisible Ink. It's hysterical.
I loved Monarcos. I had gotten to know John Ward and Mr. Oxley in Florida at Gulfstream.
Yeah.
I think in years past when they had Beautiful Pleasure and won the Eclipse Award, I went to a rooftop party and Mr. Oxley was there and very nice to me and his wife and just became kind of friends with them. And I think I was there when Monarcos. I used to cover a lot of 2-year-old and training sales, so I'd be in Florida quite a bit. I was at Gulfstream when he won an allowance race prior to winning I guess he won the Florida Derby, right? And I just loved him there. And I couldn't figure out who I liked in second, so I played a straight exacta Monarcos on top of the whole field just because I liked him.
You wheeled him
and
smart.
I wasn't a great –
smart.
Yeah, and Invisible Ink gets up. I didn't like point given. I mean, I did. I thought I respected him, but I was like, I'll take a stand and try to beat the favorite. You know, the favorite wasn't winning a lot back then. So, you know, obviously – he's in the Hall of Fame, and his record speaks for himself. But not that day, you know.
No,
I mean,
no. Yeah, the hoof.
We couldn't
hoof.
Have predicted that pace, right? You know,
the pace. And the outside post, and the hoof, and
Chavez. It was great, right?
Yeah, that's funny. So that just shows people the counterbalance. I literally was talking. We did a 5-horse box, and I had to come. I had to pick as a fifth horse. I came down to Invisible Ink or Jamaican Rum, and as I explained to Mike. Picked the top six finishers and got nothing.
Oh my!
Got
goodness.
Nothing. And very, very tough when it came to that. But 64,000 the super pig.
Man, the exact I think was 1,500.
Yeah, it was
for maybe a dollar or two.
Yep. Yeah.
Although I had it 2 years ago with the crazy disqualification 2 years ago. I was one of those. I was kind of clueless that year. I was like, I really don't know. So I'm gonna bet. I'm going to box the do these crazy. This is how scientific my handicapping is at times. I'm going to box all the trainers that I respect the most for their horsemanship, you know? So I hope I'm not offending anybody on here, but it was, Mott, Shug, you know, all the guys. So then it comes in. They disqualify. I did not have maximum security. They disqualify him. So then it comes Mott over Shug for the exacta. And I had it. You know, I was like, holy cow. Like Mandela. I think he scratched, right?
He scratched Omaha Beach.
Yeah. So it was all these other guys, you know. And
that's funny.
Yeah. So that's sometimes how I do it.
because what happens is, especially when you're not from the handicapping side, and you know when you're writing the stories, and you know you don't, it gets to be Saturday afternoon, and you've done all your regular turf riding work, and you haven't necessarily you've looked at the races, but you aren't looking at the races from a handicapping standpoint.
Right.
So as much as you are the development of the horse, the way the trainers have manipulated. I mean, what Todd, if Known Agenda happens to win this, considering how much crap Todd has had to listen to about his Derby record, they better sit up and say, you know what, whatever I ever said at any time over the last 20 years, because Todd's going in the Hall of Fame, they'll reveal, the reveal is next week,
coming
by the
up,
way.
Right?
Next Tuesday. I think next Tuesday. And Todd is certainly going to be elected in his first pass. If he wins, what he's done with that horse, for instance, has been really, it just shows that, the individual attention and tinkering and evaluating what transpired and how do we get him back, pointed in the right direction. It really would be a testimony to, to how good he is.
Well, you're maybe the AI or something. You're tuned into my AI. You might have heard me having conversations with people because he's actually the horse I like in the race.
How about that? How about that? All right, so go ahead. Let me.
And I don't even think you and I just we didn't.
No,
discuss
we haven't
this
discussed
at
it at all.
So,
not at all.
I wasn't sure what to think when he drew the one, just because, again, something that you hear a lot about over and over again with the one. I mean, I know that they have the new gate now and things are
much
a little
better.
Bit different. So, we might not have a looking at lucky kind of situation or, just getting rammed down in there. But, Irad Ortiz certainly going to work out a trip. He can work out all kinds of trips. He's riding at an unbelievable level. You think about the trip he worked out on Whitmore in the Breeders' Cup Classic to win that race. Just a beautiful ride, and I could see him, kind of working out a similar trip, obviously a much different race and on a much different kind of horse. You talked about development. I mean, this is kind of a horse that's been developed, in a classic kind of way for the modern times. He's run six times, had a lot of, foundation under him at Saratoga last summer and fall. He was up there. Todd, we do the stable tour with Todd during the meet, and we always try to get as many horses as we can into the stable tour, and there's always some that he won't tell us about or we have to really dig deep and do our homework. And if we do it, he'll certainly talk about it, but sometimes he doesn't always volunteer him up. And this was not one that appeared. We did two stable tours with Todd last year. We did what we called the 2020 special last spring. He didn't do any 2-year-olds in that one. But we did 2-year-old. Sean did one with him in the summer. He may have had Known Agenda in there. I'll have to look, but, you know, I love the pedigree on this horse. I mean, the Dam was a multiple graded stakes winner on the grass.
Yep.
He's by Curlin. You know, I was looking at her record last night. It was amazing, the races she ran in. I mean, she was out in California, yep. and then she was kind of on the East Coast.
Is that just, Patty Gallagher?
Yeah. And she was Eclipse Thoroughbreds for a while. I think by the end it was Mott had her maybe for St. Elias. I don't know if there was a private purchase or how they ended up with her.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then going to Curlin. I mean, you know, everybody's trying to draw the comparisons, I guess, to Vino Rosso. Obviously won the classic, but, you know, Curlin, his record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
You know, world-class stallion, if not the best classic stallion in America or in the world right now.
And got yeah. ended up getting King Fury into the field as
exactly.
well.
Yeah.
And then has three, of course, mm-hmm. in the Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to... There's a lot for John Sakura and team to feel good about when it comes to Curlin.
And someone asked me if I like, you know, who are my top four? Like Tim Wilkin was like, who's your four? And I'm like, oh my God.
Well, you got to.
Who are my four?
I'm asking you the same thing.
You know?
Let me get this because I got to get Nick on. Go ahead.
You know, it's crazy, but I like Todd's other one of his other horses,
Dynamic One. Yeah.
You know, we're talking about pedigrees. I mean, obviously, it's something that I. Maybe have an interest in, but you know, Union Rags out of a daughter of Storm Flag Flying. So I mean, it's like the personal ensign.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm a little bit biased there.
Having that turf stamina pedigree helps when you look at these 10 furlong.
Yeah.
When 10 furlong types.
Yeah.
Who
and,
else?
I heard Marcus talking a lot about Hot Rod Charlie. He's a horse I saw him today, and I like him. You know, it's hard to knock Doug O'Neill's record in the race. I mean, he just does so well, you know, pointing a horse for this race. And like
two wins and five trips here
Marcus
with six horses.
Point. Yeah, I mean, he's not just coming. He's not taking a stab. I mean, he's a guy that's a serious horse trainer. He was nominated for the Hall of Fame this year. I'm on the nominating committee, actually. And, you know, we didn't have to have much discussion about him being on the ballot. You know, it's the... You look at the races that he's won, it's amazing. So I like him. And then I guess, you know, I'm torn between the two horses from the Bluegrass, Central Quality and Highly Motivated. I think both are, you know, serious horses, mm-hmm. top horses. Not many, obviously, Central Quality, he's undefeated, so it's hard to knock him there. And was very game in that race. And I talked to Chad this morning. I said, for him to lose the Bluegrass, I said, I don't think I've seen a horse – That's the best losing effort I've seen since Zenyatta got beat out here at Churchill in the Breeders' Cup. So, I mean, you're going back a long ways to horse to run that good and to lose, you know, after doing all the work. You know, he's by Into Mischief, you know, another world-class sire for sure. And Essential Quality, you know, who knows? I mean...
That's fine. We'll put them both. We'll give you the blue grid. People bet the high fives. So we'll put. That's all right. We'll put the two together. No agenda is going to end up. Listen, Jim McInvale is going to guarantee that everybody's going to get more for
that's
their
true.
Buck than they were going to get otherwise. Finally,
yeah.
Tom, your Oaks horse.
So my Oaks horse is, you know, I saw her today, who I like. I didn't pick her on top, but I really like George Weaver's filly.
Oh, Pass the Champagne.
We
had a bit of a house horse with Jake Ballas here earlier.
Okay, if you really like Malathat, and why wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
You know, and George isn't the kind of guy that's again. He's not taking a stab. If he felt like maybe she wasn't quite there, he would point a filly like that to the Black Eyed Susan.
Mm-hmm. Which he's won.
Instead, he ends up here. So I do think she'll be tough. And I picked Travel Column,
which is fair. I mean, we just had Marcus make a nice. Although he's a Clairiere guy.
Yeah,
but nothing wrong with Travel
and
Column.
And again, she's run, you know, very well. She's run well here. I like that. And you know, on a personal note. Chris Welker and Bain Welker, friends of mine, and I remember I did a really funny story about Travel Column when she was a yearling, how Chris took her around in the van. It's on our website. This is horse racing. Joe wrote a little column about it the other day. She was having a lot of problems. They were worried about her getting on the van, so Chris was taking her around town, running errands in a horse trailer. And she was a yearling.
Just to get her used to it.
And she was, like, hanging out at their farm with chickens and hanging out, doing all this
that's
other
good.
Stuff.
That's good. That's good for a horse's mental makeup.
Chris Welker said, yeah, she's chicken broke. And I was like, chicken broke?
Well,
and, you know, you've chicken, done this long enough.
Yep.
When you get a quote that you've never gotten before,
that's
I'm like,
a, that's a home
I gotta
run.
Use that one. how do I get this into the story?
That might be a good name for a Philly at some point.
Chicken broke. Yeah, exactly.
Tom, this was tremendous, and we'll recap next week, and we'll look forward to Baltimore and more. And I can't thank you enough.
I will be there. I look forward to it. And yeah, let's go.
Saratoga TL, Saratoga. Tom Law, everybody. Saratoga TL on Twitter. This is horseracing.com. Saratoga Special, and now part of the firmament here on At the Races. Also part is Nick Tamaro, who is standing by, and we're going to hit the Friday card as well as the Turf Classic and Derby for those playing the Pick 3. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good. It's been it has been a full dance card here this morning.
No different from how it should be, right? Better for Derby in the spring.
Well, and here's our chance to kind of rip through, and we got about 20 minutes. I don't know if we can do this thoroughly, but we'll try. Let's actually start at the Oaks, and we'll work our way back through the stakes action.
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit the other day in talking about the field after the draw. I will say that since then, the biggest development that deserves mentioning is the scratch. Avis Grace. And the reason why that is significant is that Avis Grace looked to be the controlling speed. And, you know, it's interesting. To me, there are two horses that could really take advantage of this, and I wonder whose connections will be a little bit more astute in doing so. And that's assuming that I'd be right about it, but Passage Champagne and Search Results are the two horses to me that really could benefit the most from aggressive rides based on the way this race now shapes up on paper. And Search Results on pace figures is easily fast enough to get control. Serengeti Empress won the Oaks 2 years ago from a similar post position. She was actually one stall to the outside. So at the same time, you know, the Chad Brown generally is not a big let's send him to the lead and see what happens type of trainer, but boy, I'd love to see her ridden aggressively. I think that would really increase her chances, and I think it would be just a very, very astute move. Past the Champagne was chomping at the bit the whole way around there in the Ashland. Looked like a horse that was just ready to be let loose, and when Javier Castellano did, it was just a little bit too soon, and she ultimately got caught by Malathot, who is clearly, to me, the horse to beat in this race. So I wonder who will adjust and who might make a change on the fly. Miraz is the other possibility if she's shown some speed in the past two. I don't have a particularly huge opinion on one horse. I'm going to use Malathot. I'm going to use Search Results. I'm going to use Pauline Pearl. I'm taking an anti-Fairgrounds approach. I think that the thought process has been that the Fairgrounds Oaks horses seem to always perform well in the Kentucky Oaks. There's not really a whole lot backing that up, at least recently. And I thought Travel Column had a very, very soft slip sitting on top of a slow pace last time. So I'm going to favor Pauline Pearl of the Asmussen Runners. And kind of just focus on those. My long shot play is Maracuja, who I feel like really benefited from the extra ground last time and will once again do so. Obviously needs a little bit of pace to run at, but I think they'll go quickly enough to at least ensure it's an honestly run race. And so I'd like to include her if possible at a bit of a price.
So so if we're playing pick five and so forth, let's ABC it.
Yeah, it would be Malathot, Search Results. Pauline's Pearl for me as A's, and I'm going to use Past the Champagne, Maracuja, and the, as my B's, backups.
Very good. All right. Perfect. The turf sprint, and most of our crowd is kind of zeroed in on FIA because there's, you know, a lot of people that, you know, have connections. Some thoughts about how to approach this. I think one thing that's got people a little intimidated right now, Nick, is not knowing how much give there's going to be to that turf course.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would caution everybody with is go watch the replays of the races on 2017 on Oaks Day, and that turf course can hold a significant amount of moisture. So it's also going to be relatively warm tomorrow where it was not in 2017, and I wouldn't be too terribly concerned. FIA's biggest worry is that there's a lot of speed in here. FIA is a very fast horse. He certainly can withstand pace pressure, but they're going to go very quickly, provided that Johnny Unleashed shows the same kind of speed that he has of late. And you've got a couple of other potential pace players that could really heat things up for him. So I'm that's my biggest concern off the layoff. If he can be the kind of horse that's ready for this type of engagement, he's the horse to beat to me very clearly. Diamond Oops got a great ride from Solange Giroux when he won this race last year in the spring, or really more in the summer. And he looks dangerous to me again. I think he can be ready off the layoff. I don't have any reservations about that. He's going to be a decent enough price. So I think there's reason to include him on any kind of multi-race play. I would also say that as far as horses that I think you have to use Fast Boat. Fast Boat's going to be moving late. He's a horse that's been effective on this turf course pretty much at his best here. And that's big reason why I would use him in addition to Diamond Oops and Faya, and just hope that Faya can avoid that big time pace battle.
Nice. And Marcus, you know, Marcus made the Fast Boat point as well. The last pick five actually starts with the eight Bells. And as I said with Marcus, this is in some ways, Nick, this may be the toughest race on the 2 days.
It's quite possible, yeah, because you really don't have any kind of standout to latch on to. It should be a fast-paced race. It looks as if there's more than enough speed to set things up for some of the off-the-pace types. And many people have heard me bang the drum over the years that I love races like the 8 Bells and the Pathé Mile, the Woody Stevens a little bit later, because it's by that point that connections have had to really take their medicine and admit what their horses are. And to me, the horse that fits that bill perfectly is Super Sensational. Super Sensational and Little Tootsie both come out of the Fairgrounds Oaks, where they ran like horses that are really going to benefit from the cutback. I prefer Super Sensational of the two. Boy, you got to figure she's going to get a lot of pace in front of her. And I thought she ran a game race in the Fairgrounds Oaks, battling the whole way, grudgingly giving way late. You know, she's a curlin that doesn't want to necessarily go long, which it happens. And so I was very interested in her at 6-1. She's a horse that I'm really looking forward to over the course of the weekend. Slumber Party got a bad ride by Joel Rosario last time. There was really no reason to take her back as much as he did. However, it did sort of show the connections that she can be effective coming from off the pace, and I think that might actually help her chances. I'm going to use her. I'm going to use Obligatory. As I mentioned, I'm going to use Little Tootsie. I'm not using Daisy Day out of the office for a nickel. So this is a horse that was mentioned for six different races. She has an incredibly spotty work tab. She's got a backup rider. She's going to be on top of a hot pace. She wins, I lose. So it's just that simple. You've got to try and separate at some point. Calypso is probably the other horse that's cutting back that I want to use. I think she'll be more effective when push comes to shove sprinting. And the fact that she's got early speed in an outside post probably mitigates the risk of her getting embroiled in too much of a battle early.
Basically, no matter how you approach this, it feels like half the field is eligible to win.
It does, yeah. I mean, I didn't mention a horse like Caramel Swirl, who ran a race last time that's probably good enough to win. Abrogate, who showed a lot of potential early at Oaklawn, wasn't quite as impressive in two subsequent starts, but still looks like a horse with a lot of quality. And, I mean, for that matter, you know, I know it was on the slop, but it was against older horses. Make Mischief ran very well last time. I imagine she's going to go back to New York to face New York Breds down the line, but she's a horse with a lot of talent and still has some upside, too. So there's a reason to believe that she can perform okay.
Let's get to the La Trienne, and for the $2 two-day pick six, it's the start. And I wasn't as convinced as Marcus is, anyway, of She Dares the Devil's Invincibility. I don't know. Maybe I just haven't really warmed to her charms.
Well, she's been a lot better horse at Churchill. That's one thing. She's also going to be, I don't know if she's necessarily going to be loose on the lead, but she should be on the lead. And really the only bad race that she's run in her last five starts was the Spinster, and there's an argument to be made that she spent too much time on a dull inside.
Right.
So she looks to me to be very, very clearly the horse to beat. If Dunbar Road had a race under her belt in 2021, I'd feel a little bit better about her potentially beating her. I think it's a big, big ask off the layoff. Paris Lights is slow and hasn't moved forward. I think Semenis has seen better days. Unfortunately, I think she left a race on the track in the La Cunada. I don't have any idea why they continue to run Finite at two turns, but it almost makes me feel like it's a reason why you should include her. Because I know they probably didn't want to run against Gamine, but Gamine didn't run in the Madison, and the Madison would have been an ideal spot for this horse. She was already training, and that's a grade one at 7 furlongs, but they have been steadfast, even saying that the Fleur de Lis was a goal for the middle of the summer. And, I mean, to me, Finite is just very, very clearly a one-turn horse. She's going to get a good trip stalking outside She Dares the Devil, and she might get the jump on everybody that's coming from a little bit off of it. So I'm going to use her as a backup. I'm going to keep it simple and use She Dares the Devil as a lone A, because this two-day tick six is obviously going to have some races where you have to be significantly deeper.
Yeah, especially when we talk about, tomorrow we'll talk about the Saturday card and that Churchill Downs. I haven't looked at it enough, but it looks pretty vexing.
You'll never have looked at it enough.
Hey.
You can spend now until post time and you won't feel like you've looked at it enough.
There you go. The Edgewood, and here on Pearl, is trying. We discussed it last hour. It's been discussed on Derby Trail. I don't think it's, again, this is not necessarily a place where Aunt Pearl is just an automatic single on every multi-ticket.
Well, remember something else, and this, of course, sets off the chorus of accusations. Brad Cox's horses are always ready to go on big days. He had a big couple of days Derby weekend last year. He had a big couple of days Breeders' Cup weekend. To me, this horse would have made a lot of sense in the Appalachian, given the way she ran a couple of times at Keeneland last year, and he had this picked out, obviously, because he likes the spacing to potentially international engagement, and I just don't, he's one of those guys that, with his good horses, when they put the tack on them, he's got them ready to run, so she looked like a complete layup to me. I don't see how anybody in this race can be competitive with her. These are like C-level three-year-old turf fillies. So it's not a matter of her, it's everybody else. And she's going to beat these horses because nobody in here is really any good. I kind of hoped that Jouster would run, or, maybe we'd see a horse that we hadn't seen a whole lot out of that could potentially move forward. I mean, Giftlist is the kind of horse that I always bet against that ran well off the ship in, and they usually take a step backwards second off the ship. So I don't know. We'll see if maybe she can improve. I thought Aunt Pearl seemed like a complete cinch.
Very good. Maxfield also odds on in the Ali Sheba 4-5. And I don't know. I just came at this card wanting to, beat anything at prohibitively low prices.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. And he's a horse that you really like to take a swing against. I mean, he is one of the most overrated horses you'll ever find. And it's because Brendan Walsh is extremely likable. He was undefeated going into the Santa Anita handicap. But, I mean, he was being talked about as a real heavy in the handicap division. And the horse has done nothing but beat up on horses like Sonneman and Chess Chief. And, of course, who's he facing in the Ali Sheba? Sonneman and Chess Chief. So it's another situation where he's probably going to win, and he's going to look good doing it. And those of us that that people would refer to as perhaps as curmudgeons are going to say, well, he continues to just beat up on vastly inferior horses. The question is Roadster, right? I mean, if Roadster is ridden aggressively by IRAD, he could potentially wire this field. It's amazing to me that Roadster came into the Kentucky Derby the way he did, and his career has gone the way it has since. And I say that because Baffert does very, very well getting his horses to where they can win. And this horse has just not been in a lot of spots. He's obviously not been in any spots that he's won because he's on an 8-race losing streak. And he's actually run poorly numerous times. So you wonder what was going on with Speedway, with having him with Stidham for a race and, I guess, wanting him trained down there. And now he's back with Baffert. I don't know. He seems like the only alternative I'm going to use him because I've never really trusted Maxfield, and I think you need to have a bit of an alternative there.
Good deal. There's your Friday action, and since we did mention how the $2 pick six lays out, I suppose, Nick, we can quickly say, I mean, Gamin, automatic without any concerns?
Yeah, she looks as automatic as they come, every bit of 1-5 on the morning line, and this is the proverbial she might have to fall down to lose situation. I don't want her to fall down. I don't want her to lose either, because we don't have enough good horses out there right now. We need as many possible. So, yeah, she looks like a cinch.
Well, then let's quickly hit the that Churchill Downs handicap. Who has to be used? Because if you know, frankly, under this scenario with She Dares the Devil in the La Troyenne, the $2 pick six becomes a pick four.
It does. Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, horses that have to be used, I would say from the top, I'm absolutely positively using, and I want to make sure that I get these numbers right as well, because it is a deep and competitive race, and I don't want to miss anybody. I'm going to use Fat Man, even though I'm concerned about him running without Lasix. I'm going to use Flagstaff because he's in very good form. Looks like he could be forwardly placed. There's not a lot of speed. I'm going to use Tappet to win. I'm going to use Shesha Shake Me Up, who seems to be moving forward off a claim. Whitmore, Bango, Endorsed, and that's it. So those are the horses that I'm going to use for sure. I think you have to use every bit of them. I think there are even some that I left out that some people might like. I don't like Basin. I thought Basin was horrible last time and was very, very lucky to win because of some shenanigans down the stretch. I would use Attachment Rate if he runs here.
He's not.
I know there's not a lot of pace, but
he's not
running Friday. Okay, good. Yeah,
Dale said he's running on Friday.
Maybe he'll get sent to the lead going along, which isn't the worst idea. So I think he had a better shot in there. But yeah, I mean, this looks like a complete minefield. It looks like you could go a million different directions. I thought Endorsed ran very well last time, went second to Fat Man. He didn't get the cleanest of trips. I've always kind of had an idea that he'd be better shorter, maybe 7/8 to a mile. And this looks like a pretty reasonable spot. I don't have a good read on Hot Creek Hustle because I feel like he probably needed his last race. But you also wonder if Hot Creek Hustle is even up to this kind of engagement anymore.
Let's, Nick, we're going to get tight. I wanted to say at least hello to Gus before I got off the air. And who has to be used in the Turf Classic?
Count again, Colonel Liam, domestic spending.
There you go. And now just Derby uses for those playing the two-day races. We'll flesh out more complex Derby wagering with Nick tomorrow. Who is eligible to win this race?
I mean, as far as win candidates go, I'm going to use Known Agenda, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon, Dynamic One, Essential Quality. Those are my win candidates. If somebody wins from outside that grouping, then I'll lose.
That's all right. So six, basically six by three by seven, so 42, 126, two singles, and then the Oaks horses. So, I mean, it's a big ticket at first blush, but maybe we'll have a couple of minutes to refine it tomorrow. But for those wanting to play the Oaks Turf Classic and Derby Pick 3, you got your format, and you've got tomorrow, the Friday action, laid out with Nick. And, Nick, is your Belmont Pick 6 ticket and Belmont picks, they're up at In the Money?
They are. InTheMoneyPodcast.com. My analysis is there in a video going through the sequence where kind of walk you through what it looks like. So we'll hope for good weather and an opportunity to make a little money and have some in the coffers for Derby.
I understand that there wasn't. Our friend Steve Carlin and partner Steve said that really didn't get much rain overnight. So if it holds off the way it looks like on the forecast in Elmont, those four races may stay on the turf. Is it a playable, approachable sequence, reasonable money?
Yeah, I think very. At the dollar increment, I think it's playable. Chad Brown looks like he's got two pretty good-looking singles, one on the turf, one on the dirt. So, yeah, I think so.
Outstanding. Nick, we'll talk tomorrow and get through Saturday with you.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM1215, and standing by to wish everybody good luck for the weekend. Gus Alonso joins us, Bogey 1963, and Gus, here you are. I'm not going to ask you to for too many opinions just because you're tied in, of course, your analysis available at BrizNet.
That's correct, Steve. Just an outstanding 2 days here ahead of us, actually, with the Derby today. Man, it's going to be a fantastic weekend. The wagering menu is just fantastic. Lots of way to go. I mean, pick fives are plenty. And those pick six, the one you just talked about with Nick, looks very playable. I mean, especially if you're going to single a couple there. I think there's some prices. And this thing's going to pay off. And we also have the Derby City Six, which has a mandatory payout on Sunday. I mean, on Saturday on the Derby Day, which also should build up pretty well as well. So just a lot of ways to go, a lot of studying. All my work's done now. It's up at BrizNet now. So here, just got to fine-tune here for the next couple days. Probably just watch the track. Hopefully there's no scratches. We've got full fields in both big races. So looking forward to just a fantastic weekend.
Well, Gus, how about one horse, some random horse on the weekend somewhere?
I'll tell you what, I'll give you a long shot on Saturday. Hopefully you can build the bankroll for later on in the afternoon.
Yeah.
In the Distaff Turf Mile, I like Abscon at 15-1. I think she's got a shot from there. I think she runs a good race from the outside. She possesses that tactical speed, and Rosario, you can't go wrong with that horse at 15-1. Also, one of the big things we're waiting for tomorrow is what's the over and under on Satish with the F-bombs. I'm going to put it at 3.
What's your number? 3.5?
I say that I'm going to go 3.5.
All right.
Hopefully, you could go over.
Good job. Good job.
All right, Steve. Great work. I appreciate being on.
Not at all. Bogey 1967, everybody. It's Tina that's 1963. Bogey 1967. If you're not following Gus, you should be, and his analysis, and Dick Powell's as well, and Rich Ang's as well at BrizNet. What a fun, fast morning this was. We got 3 more hours starting tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Replay here, 6 to 9. And, of course, Casey will get the pod up and the archive ASAP. Thanks to everybody that came through this morning. Talk to you tomorrow. Oaks Day.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.